Akaris Musawi, the 20th hijacker, the guy that didn't want to take off in planes, didn't want to land planes, just wanted to steer planes. If we had known about that, we could have done something about it. And George Bush has said, oh, if I'd known they were going to fly planes in and into buildings, we would have done something to stop it. Well, here's the scoop, folks. It hasn't been reported anywhere else in the media, to my knowledge. It comes from Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War. I'm reading it now. What do they say? It says, the Tenet, worrying about the possibility of terrorism, because after all, Tenet was telling the president every day, CIA Director Tenet was telling him every day he needs to worry about an al-Qaeda attack. So he's sitting there, he's talking with former Senator Boren of Oklahoma, and they're at breakfast. He's worried about an attack, and I'm going to read from the book. It's very important because this hasn't gotten a lot of press. Suddenly, this is a direct quote from the book, suddenly several of Tenet's security guards approached. They were not strolling, they were bolting toward the table. Mr. Director, one of them said, there's a serious... CIA Director Tenet was telling him every day he needs to worry about an al-Qaeda attack. So he's sitting there, he's talking with former Senator Boren of Oklahoma, and they're at breakfast. He's worried about an attack, and I'm going to read from the book. It's very important because this hasn't gotten a lot of press. Suddenly, this is a direct quote from the book, suddenly several of Tenet's security guards approached. They were not strolling, they were bolting toward the table. Mr. Director, one of them said, there's a serious problem. What is it? Tenet asked, indicating that it was okay to speak freely. The World Trade Center tower has been attacked. One of them handed Tenet. What happened is he had to go. He also had nothing to do with this guy taking pilot training, unquote. He was referring to Zakarias Moussaoui, a French citizen of Moroccan descent, whom the FBI Woodward lying. No one has said he first came out. But let's now connect the dots. George Tenet, seconds after the attack, according to Woodward, knew that, according to Clark, when he told her about al-Qaeda in January 2004. And we're going to hope that Condoleezza Rice comes clean. But, I got to worry about Condoleezza Rice. She's going to testify, but Bush won't. And as you've just heard me say from the book Bush at War, that no doubt that George Tenet, CIA director, knew about the potential for an attack, specifically knew about Musawi, you know, a calling rally of the FBI. Information up the ladder, no one was listening. Apparently, at least according to Bob Woodward, George Tenet heard the news. Did he pass it on to the president? He says he talked to him every day. Did he pass it on to the president? You know, whether he did or didn't, it was a gross failure. It was a gross negligence. And the reason is because Clinton was worrying about terrorism, and Bush just wasn't. So these are the kinds of scoops like the damages, the dangers in our homeland security about the fact that our nuclear and chemical weapon plants have not been protected. That has yet to be a major story. I expect it to be. But I want you to tune in every day to get the help you do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. 877-577-2667. Now, today, as I said, is Election Tuesday. And so we are going to be discussing Bush and Kerry. That's what we do on Election Tuesday. We're going to talk about who'd be the better president. And I try every Tuesday to invite a gasp Republican on my show. That's right. I like to invite the opposition to my show. And I want to explain why. In fact, one of my great longtime listeners, Joel, I won't give his last name, but Joel called in and he was quite upset last week because I invited a Republican on the air. And Joel said that, hey, you know, most of the media is right-wing conservatives. Certainly on talk radio, that's the case. More than 90% of talk radio hosts are from the right wing. And Joel said, we've heard enough of them. Why we like you, Mark, is because you are giving the other side. Why do you allow those right-wingers on your program? And I explained to Joel, and I want to explain to you, you folks at radiopower.org, I want to explain that when you have the truth, right, when you can defend your positions, when our positions are right, we shouldn't fear arguing them with the other side. In fact, we should embrace it. Because we go out in the world, all over the world, you're going to be hearing people who disagree with you, with me, right-wingers, people who are considering voting for Bush, people who are in the middle and hearing from both sides. And I think you need to hear what the other side has to say. I think you need to know what the other side's going to say so you know how to respond to it. And you folks can help me, in fact, by calling in 877-57-SCOOP when my young Republican comes on the air. Her name is Allison Eichele. She is from Logan, Utah, which I think is the heart of the red states. she's going to come on and she's going to defend President Bush. She's going to defend the position. She and I are going to have what I expect to be a debate full of fireworks. I hope you'll tune in for that. And I hope you'll call in 877-57-SCOOP to challenge her, to challenge me, to bring it on. Bring it on, of course, is the words that George Bush said to terrorists. I don't think that was too smart. But it's also the words John Kerry's used when he's tried to get a debate with Bush, and Bush has refused. And I think that needs to be the position that we, who support the Democratic Party, need to be on. We need to say, bring it on. We're not afraid of debate. Come on, bring it on. So I'm going to bring it on with Allison Eichele and your calls at 877-57-SCOOP right after these messages.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The chairman and vice chairman of the independent commission investigating the September 11th attacks said Monday that they would ask Condoleezza Rice to testify under oath in any future questioning because of discrepancies between her statements and those made in sworn testimony by President Bush's former counterterrorism chief. I would like to have her testimony under penalty of perjury, said the commission's chairman, Thomas Kane, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, in comments that reflected the panel's exasperation with the White House and Ms. Rice, the president's national security advisor. A voter survey tied to Republican effort to raise money for House candidates mislabels Thailand and the Philippines as countries that harbor and aid terrorists, say officials from both governments. A question on the National Republican Congressional Committee's Ask America 2004 Nationwide Policy Survey asks, should America broaden the war on terrorism into other countries that harbor and aid terrorists, such as Thailand, Syria, Somalia, the Philippines, etc.? Officials from both nations say the question came as a surprise since the Bush administration has praised their countries for their roles in the anti-terror war. With U.S. retail gasoline prices at a record high, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Tuesday will propose a new policy to reduce fuel costs, igniting a political fight over how much Americans pay at the pump. Blaming the spike on the failed policies of Republican President Bush, a former Texas oil man, Kerry would pressure oil-producing nations to increase production and temporarily suspend filling the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, campaign aide said. Kerry chose San Diego, which has the highest gas prices in the country, $2.12 for a gallon of regular unleaded, to lay out his proposals. Alistair Cook, the broadcaster who epitomized highbrow television as host of Masterpiece Theater and whose Letter from America was a radio fixture in Britain for 58 years, has died, the British Broadcasting Corporation said Tuesday. He was 95. Cook died at his home in New York at midnight, a spokesman for the BBC's press office said. No cause of death was given, but Cook had retired earlier this month because of heart disease. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A Texas woman heating fish sticks was shot in the leg by a .357 caliber handgun that had been stashed in her oven by a friend, police said. Roxanne Perez was taken to a local hospital where she was in good condition, police said on Friday. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. That was the song Young Conservatives, because I'm about to debate a young conservative. Her name is Allison Eichele. She is from Logan, Utah. I think Utah may be the most conservative state in the United States. I don't know if it is. It's pretty close. It's in the heart of the red states. And Logan is probably one of the most conservative towns in there. So it should be a good debate. We're debating here on Election Tuesday, of course, Kerry V. Bush, who would make the better president of the United States. And I want to welcome you to the show, Allison. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'll tell you, when I think of the Bush presidency, I guess I go back to that wonderful Saturday Night Live episode. I don't know if you saw it, where they had what would happen if Gore were president, if Nader were president, and if Bush were president. And they showed if Gore was president, they said, well, it would be very boring. He'd be in front of a computer. Everything would run smoothly, but he'd be speaking in a monotone to everyone. And they said that if Kerry were president, well, pigs would fly. And then they had Will Ferrell playing George Bush, and they said if Bush were president, there'd be a war, there were fires in the background showing out the White House window, he was hiding under his desk, and he comes out from his desk and he says, oh, I'm sorry, America, I'm sorry I messed up the economy, I'm sorry about that war, I didn't mean it. And at the time, it was really funny. Of course, now we do have fires pretty much within sight of the White House at the Pentagon on 9/11. We have the worst economy since the Great Depression, at least in terms of jobs, the worst number of jobs lost. And I guess the only difference I see between George Bush and Will Ferrell is that Will Ferrell apologized for it. I guess you disagree.
I definitely do disagree. I don't think that President Bush has created all these things that were satire, apparently, in Saturday Night Live. I mean, if you go back and you look, President Bush inherited a lot of these things with the economy, the war on terror. The Clinton administration basically just failed to address this for 8 years.
Blame Clinton.
So,
blame Clinton. It's always blame Clinton, isn't it?
Well, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore that he basically did nothing, and he was in the White House with the interns for 8 years rather than taking care of our problems.
Yep. Talk about sex, and don't talk about national security. This is great, Allison. This is exactly what I expect from a college Republican. Hey, look, okay, you say Clinton did nothing on the economy. Is that what you're going to say? I mean, we had the best economy in eight years.
But we did inherit the recession that had started during the Clinton administration.
When did the recession start, Allison? What month? What year?
Of 2000.
You're wrong. You're wrong. It was March 2001. If you don't believe me, go to the National Bureau of Economic Statistics. This is the federal government. This is not, you know, these are bureaucrats. The recession began in March 2001. Now, you know, you're just wrong on that. But we'll let our listeners check it out for ourselves. The statistics are that it began in March 2001 and it concluded in November 2001. But to me, what's most interesting is that you have these huge Bush tax cuts going mostly to the extremely wealthy, and you've got the Federal Reserve doing their best to lower interest rates to the very max. And now you have an economy limping along. Now, let me give you my reason for it, and then I want to hear from you as to why you think it's limping along. I think that this massive stimulus is going to the wrong people. I think it's going to very wealthy people, and that when you make $10 million a year and someone gives you another million, you know, there's nowhere to spend it. I mean, if you own a car factory and nobody's buying your cars, you're not going to hire more people if you make another million. It won't matter to you. But if you get, let me just make my argument. Let me make my argument, and then I promise I'll give you a chance to respond. My argument is, if you take the $1 million and you instead split it 100 ways and give 10,000 each to lower and middle class people, people who are struggling to make a living, to pay the rent, feed their children, they're more likely to go out and buy cars. They're more likely to stimulate the economy. And had the tax cuts been more fairly done throughout the country, we'd be booming right now. You disagree?
I do. Do you know who pays most of the taxes in this country? It is the wealthy. I mean, you can't give tax cuts to people that aren't paying. But I agree.
What about Social Security taxes?
The middle class, the regular people, they do need the tax cuts. People like me, people like my parents, people like peers at my work.
Okay, so then you would support Kerry's plan to lower taxes.
No, 350 times.
What Kerry said. Well, let's talk about 350 times. I'll get that in a minute. But Kerry's plan is to lower taxes on those earning under 200 grand and to increase taxes on those making over 200 grand. Now, wouldn't that do what I said? Wouldn't that help more people buy cars and increase jobs in car factories if lower and middle class people had more money in their pockets?
I think that Kerry's tax plan is a nice political front, but I don't think that his tax cut really represent what the American people need as far as a tax cut and as far as building the economy.
Yeah, you want to give it all to the multimillionaires, right?
And I don't believe that's what the tax cuts do, and I think you're wrong on that.
Well, more than half of the tax cuts have gone to very wealthy people. I mean, look, there are lots of taxes. You just said poor people don't pay taxes. You would agree. Poor people pay Social Security taxes. They pay Medicare. They pay sales taxes. None of those taxes got a cut under Bush, right? I mean, he only cut things like the estate tax so that Anna Nicole Smith can marry some 83-year-old man and get, you know, hundreds of millions without being taxed.
Well, what about investments tax and child credits and things like that that go to regular people?
Well, when you talk about child credits, Kerry supports those, right? Kerry supports, like, the marriage penalty and all and child tax credits. That there's no disagreement over. Where they disagree over...
Kerry just pretty much supports anything that's going to increase taxes so that he can spend more money.
Well, you're wrong. I mean, that's just simply not the case. I want to talk about your 350 tax increases, because there's a great article by Michael Kinsley precisely on that. I want to read a little bit of a quote from this Michael Kinsley article. He writes, "The purpose of a phony statistic such as this one isn't to convince people of its own accuracy. The purpose is to trap your opponent in a discussion he doesn't want to have, in this case about past votes on taxes, bog down the discussion in silly details that few people will follow, and leave a general impression that where there's smoke, there must be fire." But here's what Kinsley did. He went to the 350 votes that is being charged all the time by you and others, and he said that only two were tax increases. It was the Bush's Kerry support for the Clinton 1993 deficit reduction plan. They counted it twice. There were 67 votes where there was part of a huge package with all kinds of things in it, and 9 votes were listed twice, 3 were listed 3 times, 2 were listed 4 times, and there, you know, there'd be procedural things. He actually goes and looks at Bush in Texas, and Bush had 63 revenue enhancers. In fact, that's Bush in the federal government. So, I mean, you can play all you want with numbers, but...
Let's talk numbers.
Okay.
John Kerry, in his own advertisement, says that within the first 100 days, he's going to roll back the Bush taxes. Well, and then the first 100 days, he's got these some 80 initiatives that he's going to propose to pay for these programs that's close to $2 trillion. How does he plan to pay for that? Oh, it's going to come right out of my pocket and your pocket.
Well, I want to know how Bush plans to pay for his $10 trillion. I mean, he promised us a surplus of $5 trillion. And now he's promising us a deficit of $5 trillion, and Bush has no idea where the money's coming from. Look, you and I both know, Allison, you and I both know that politicians often promise more than they give, all right? The difference is that Kerry hasn't come up with a plan. He's coming up with it in the next months to talk about where trillion's coming from.
Kerry hasn't come up with a
plan. Bush's plan,
according
to the Brookings Institution, is somewhere between misleading and deceptive. In other words,
according
it's
to the Brookings
false.
Institute, which is a liberal institute.
I don't think of the Brookings Institute as a liberal institute. We can disagree on that. But Bush, look, Bush promised us a surplus. He promised us he wouldn't raid Social Security. He promised us no deficits. And now we have the biggest spending president, the worst deficits in American history. And you're attacking Kerry's numbers for not.
We may have a spending administration right now, but you think of what we've had. We've had a recession. We've had September 11th. We've had a war. And the spending that President Bush has made and that he's proposed is nothing compared to what President Kerry, or would be President Kerry, would even come plan. He would even come near to plan on spending.
Well, let's compare with President Clinton. In President Clinton's time, spending went up 2.5% a year. I just had a guy from the Cato Institute on my show last week. He said under Bush, 24% a year. And the other thing that's interesting is that 75% of the deficit, the surplus, the difference, what we're losing, 75% is caused by tax revenues. Only 25% is caused by spending. So, I mean, I agree with you. We have to spend more on 9/11. I think $100, $200 billion thrown after Iraq is a mistake. But don't you think – there was a proposal in the Senate, all right, the pay-as-you-go proposal. And in virtually a party-line vote, there were a couple Republicans that broke ranks, but they voted to say that any time you do a tax cut, you should pay for it with a spending cut. And it was a 51-48 vote. Do you support that pay-as-you-go, Allison, or don't you?
Do I support the tax as you – what are you asking?
Did you support the idea that any time you do a tax cut, there should be equal spending cuts?
Sure. I mean, I think that that's kind of a general and vague question. I don't think that without specific examples, we can really answer that question.
Well, the specific example in the Senate was the Senate's approved a measure by a 51-48 vote that said that any tax cuts in the future, you got to put in the same bill – an equal spending cut to make sure the deficit doesn't get any worse. And it was a 51-48 vote, and virtually all Democrats voted for it. Virtually all Republicans voted against it. There were a few who switched. But don't you think, I mean, you know, you're a young person. Don't you think it's not fair for someone of your generation to pay taxes 20 years from now, both for your government 20 years from now and for your government today? Shouldn't we older people pay? I'm not that much older than you, but shouldn't we pay our government today and not impose upon your generation paying twice as much taxes later?
I think that the way you word that and the way that you ask that question is a bit deceptive.
All right.
I mean,
tell me why.
I just think that I mean, when you take all market factors and economy factors and all these things into account, you can't really predict and say we have to spend exactly this much and cut exactly this much. So then in 20 years we've the exact same thing. I mean, we've got circumstances. We've got 9/11. We will have wars. We'll have all sorts of Medicare things, Social Security. We've got all sorts of issues that we need to be paying attention to. And I think that to just typically just put a set formula on that, whatever we spend, we have to cut in some other area, isn't necessarily an accurate depiction of what we really need to be doing.
You know what I find interesting is that in the 70s and the 80s, the Republicans always attack the Democrats as the big spenders. They're the ones who are huge deficit spending. It's wrong. And now we see exactly the reverse. If you're a fiscal conservative, you should vote for the Democrat in November 2004.
Oh, I think you're wrong because I don't want to pay more in taxes.
Well, but don't you see that if you cut your taxes now, but you don't cut spending, it's not a question of paying less. It's a question of deferred tax. It's like running up a huge credit card bill. You know, there are people that use their credit card and they buy all kinds of things and they say, hey, this stuff is free. It's not free. You have to pay it back.
But do you think that by maybe cutting taxes, that would invigorate the economy and thus it would generate more tax revenue? If people have more money to spend, then in that way, that's how we could generate the economy and we could get things going.
Well,
not necessarily. I don't think that by saying, okay, for example, if you go to the store and they're not selling enough products by raising the price maybe from 25 cents to 50 cents, people are going to stop buying the product. It's not going to help the store by raising the price. Does that make sense?
It does, but Allison, I think the answer is not cutting taxes in general, but who the taxes are cut. Which taxes are cut? If you cut estate taxes, okay, that will encourage people to kill their rich relatives, right? I mean, if you say that if someone dies with $100 million, it's not going to be taxed, well, that doesn't affect the economy at all. All it means is that rich trust fund babies like George W. Bush get money without being taxed. But if you were to cut Social Security taxes or tax other taxes that affect lower and middle class people, yeah, then I think it would stimulate the economy. My problem is not tax cuts in general. It's, number one, who they're going to, and number two, if you cut taxes so much, we have these huge deficits that people in your generation have to pay for it. Hey, folks, if you want to join in this conversation, you want to take me on or take Allison on, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Join us in this raucous debate. 877-57-SCOOP, call in, and you can challenge me or challenge Allison. Allison, do you agree with me? I'm sure you don't.
Agree with you on.
Do you agree with me that it's not just a question of if taxes are cut in general, but whose taxes are cut?
Not necessarily. I think that taxes need to be cut across the board.
Okay, and what spending would you cut to match it? I mean, or would you just run a huge deficit?
That's quite the question.
It's a tough question. I know. That's why I'm asking you. What spending would you cut?
That's kind of a large-scale question. I mean, if I had to answer, I mean, there are so many things that the government spends money on.
Loans for children to college.
Would it be possible for me to go through every single program?
Well, let's talk about some. Okay, loans for kids to go to college. You support those? Social Security, Medicare. Do you think that should be cut?
Medicare?
Yeah, Medicare. You think that should be cut?
No, and I think that the way that you ask that question, I mean, this is a typical Democratic question. I mean,
I admit it. I'm a Democrat.
Should we just cut Medicare?
Well,
no,
you tell me. What would you cut? You want to lower taxes across the board. You don't want to increase the deficit. What would you cut?
Listen, I'm not saying you have to cut things. In order to cut taxes, I'm not necessarily saying, okay, we have to oust welfare because that's a wasted program. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is things like capital gains, investment, death tax, you know all these things that we don't necessarily need that we could get rid of that would invigorate economies. Not necessarily saying, okay, we're going to go ahead and cut income taxes for everybody that makes under $200,000. And so, well, I guess to pay for that, we're going to cut everything that has to do with Medicare. That's not it at all, and that's a very jaundiced way to word that question.
Well, I don't think you gave me any specifics, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to bring a caller on and see what he or she has to say. If you want to join in this conversation, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. Come on in. Bring it on. Take on me. Take on Allison. Who do you think should win this election? Caller, what's your first name and where are you from?
Hi, This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hello, Bert from Minnesota. What is your comment or question?
Well, I think I was kind of hearing you say pretty much what I was saying. You know, it was the tax cuts have been mainly paid for by shifting the burden of what were previously social programs taken care of at the federal level. Now they seem to be taken care of at local and state levels.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, they're raising taxes.
Property taxes are going up because, you know, the Bush tax cuts, hey, it looks great for his election, but now local municipalities are going to have to take care of this. God knows, Department of Homeland Security, the Fire Department of New York had requested, I don't know what it was, $300 million. Hey, they got like 30.
Bert,
I mean, it's...
Bert, hang on. I want to see what Allison has to say to that. Allison, what about the idea that when you cut federal taxes, it just makes local and state taxes go up?
I don't think that's a rational argument at all. I mean, I think that if you're cutting things like capital gains tax, investment tax, I don't see how that would have a direct correlation on your local municipal taxes.
Well, what it does is it means the federal government can give less money to the states, and so they need to get more money. I mean, you have, in the Clinton years, practically every state
right,
had a surplus.
Right, but if the federal government is cutting my taxes, I'm going to probably spend more money in my state. And so, in turn, if I have an extra $1,500 to spend a month, I'm probably going to spend it in my state, which is where I live, and thus it'll generate more revenue. It'll generate an economy. That's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah, but I think you still got to pay for state and local services, and I think that's first point. Bert, you got more to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, and then let's put it back into what she was just talking about. She keeps calling, you always hear Republicans call the estate tax the death tax. But, I mean, you summarized it well. It's so that Anna Nicole Smith doesn't have to pay gajillions. I mean, even on the floor of the Senate, they went up and said to delay. They said, all right, let's say it's $100 million. What if we put a buffer on $100 million?
Russ Feingold's
three
bill.
Whoever it was. They said three people in the world will have to pay this tax upon their death. How about that? And his response was, I think the words were, ain't going to happen.
Hey, Allison, you're not going to defend that, are you?
I wasn't present in that conversation.
No, but here's the proposal,
okay,
all right?
It's
Senator Russ Feingold's proposal from Wisconsin. He said, all right, Republicans, you want to cut the estate tax, which you call the death tax. You want to make sure that heirs can get money tax-free. And he said, you know what? I'll make you a deal. They can get $100 million tax-free. But if you want to leave your child more than $100 million, we want to tax it. And the Republicans voted against that. You're not going to defend that, are you?
Why would I?
Okay, well, good. No, I'm glad to know you agree.
I'm contradicting your point. I mean, I think that it all boils down to, I think that the more people get to keep in their pocket, I mean, I think I can spend my money better than the government, bottom line. And the more money that I get to keep in my pocket and out of the government's hands, I think that it will in turn invigorate the economy.
Has someone left you $150 million? Because otherwise this won't affect you. I mean, unless you're going to marry some 80-year-old billionaire.
$1 million, I'd probably go on vacation.
Exactly. Thank you. That was very honest, and I appreciate that. If you got $100 million, you'd probably go on vacation. You probably wouldn't build a factory and hire workers. I think that's my point.
Well,
exactly,
would you
Allison.
Vacation, Mark? Would you spend money, or would you just keep it in your pocket?
No, but the point is...
You don't spend money, and you know what? That helps out those stores that are hiring those workers.
Unless you go vacation abroad.
Thank you.
Hey, Bert, anything else? I want to go on to my next caller.
Kind of after point, summarizing, when you cut federal things, then it moves to the state. When you cut state, then it moves local. And there are some things that the states and the governments have to buy. I have not bought a Secret Service agent today.
Right. No, I think it's a good point. Let me go to another caller. Caller, what's your first name and where are you calling from?
Well, my name is Mike, and I'm from Minnesota.
Mike from Minnesota. You're one of my regulars. How are you, sir?
Very good, Mark. How are you?
Are you enjoying this debate?
Well, it's interesting for sure.
You want to take on me or Allison?
I just want to ask Allison a few questions.
Go right ahead.
Allison, you know, earlier in the debate, you said something about poor people don't pay any taxes. I mean, I just don't even understand that. Isn't it true that, and I need some help on this because I don't...
No, that's not what I said because I'm a college student. I'm poor, and you know what? 26% of my paycheck every month goes to taxes. So I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that in a certain tax bracket, there are some people that do not pay income taxes.
Usually the highest.
Sales tax. I'm not including this astronomical gas taxes we've got. I'm not saying those kinds of things. What I'm saying is that the people that make the most in this country are paying the great load of the taxes.
Yeah, but what is wrong with that?
I don't believe that.
No, I think that as a number of dollars, I will agree with Allison that if you're a multimillionaire, you're paying a greater number of dollars to the federal government. I mean,
corporations and things like that.
Well, you're right about that, Mike. That's a good point.
Can get to the point where they literally don't pay anything. And I know that if I was a multi-zillionaire, like the people that Allison's defending, I would like to keep it the way it is.
I'm defending myself, and I'm definitely not a multi-zillionaire.
No,
I'm not saying, hold on. I'm afraid you're defending them.
Well, one at a time. Mike, let me ask Allison the point that I think you're asking. And
okay.
Allison, we're picking on you a lot. I appreciate your bravery in coming here and trying.
Okay.
It's very hard to defend this president. I know that. And you're doing a valiant job trying. But
yeah,
I think that Mike's question, and it's a good one, is it's not just a question about rich people, but corporations are paying less and less taxes. In fact, you have companies like Halliburton moving offshore, and there's actually tax benefits to a company moving offshore.
What I'm saying is I don't understand why we are punishing corporations and punishing small businesses and punishing those types of people for increasing their economic value, increasing marketing, increasing competition and those kinds of things. I don't understand why we punish those types of deals. I mean, I think that is the heart of also invigorating the economy.
Well, you call it punishing, Allison, but, you know, we've got to pay – we got to fund something. I mean, did you support the war in Iraq?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you think we should pay for it, or do you think we should make your generation pay twice for it in 10 years? I mean, you got to have some taxes, all right? Nobody likes paying taxes.
I agree. I'm not saying we need to cut taxes.
Okay, well, then the question is...
You're spinning everything I'm saying around.
Well, tell me where I'm wrong.
I don't mean necessarily, okay, let's eliminate taxes in this country. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay,
Come on, quit being crazy.
Well, no, but who should be taxed? Who should be taxed? If you're not going to tax corporations and you're not going to tax...
Look, everybody in this country drives on the roads. Everybody in this country uses the services of the police department. Everybody uses all these things. You know what? Everybody needs to pay for them. And I agree. I'm a student. I'm poor. You know,
should support John Kerry.
I'm not saying that the wealthy need to pay the exact same dollar amount that I'm paying. I'm not saying that at all.
Good.
Well, chances are they probably pay less than you do. And I
doubt that.
I would put forth the argument that the poor people and the middle and the lower class pay the predominant taxes in this country.
You're very wrong on that. You just need to check out your numbers from bureaucracies. That's wrong.
Well, we got to go to a break. I hope you'll hang on, Mike, and I know you'll hang on, Allison. Hang on just one moment. I agree with Allison that in terms of income taxes, the rich pay more. I think statistics show that. There are definitely taxes that the poor pay more. One of those would be Social Security taxes, which, as you may well know, when you make up to $80,000, you pay Social Security taxes. But if you make more than $80,000, that's all you pay. So someone who makes $80,000 pays 6%. Someone who makes $800,000 pays only 0.6%. That's a tax that is disproportionately on the poor. The point is there are taxes that favor the rich pay more, income taxes, no question about it, estate taxes, capital gains taxes, and there are taxes that the poor pay, Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes, sales taxes. What I find interesting is that George Bush wants to cut only the taxes that favor the rich, that they pay, not the tax cuts that can favor the poor. But I'm going to give Allison a chance to respond to me and respond to you. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. It's a toll-free number. This is Election Tuesday. Bring it on.
Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Tell you about a quiet crisis spreading in America's suburbs today on Hightower Radio. Despite George W.'s recent cheerleading effort to convince us that sizz boom bah, the economy is surging and the boom is back, most Americans are shaking their heads and saying, a boom for whom? With the mass of offshoring of both blue-collar and white-collar jobs, and with the Walmartization of wages and benefits here at home, it's no longer just the unskilled, down-and-out, abject poor who are left out by our boom-boom economy, but also skilled, formerly middle-class workers. There's a quiet crisis spreading in the America that Washington and Wall Street either never visit or ignore. I'm not talking about the inner cities, but the middle-class suburbs, where even hunger is a growing problem. Food insecurity, as the jargonists label it, is up by 15% in the last 4 years. That's 1.5 million new people now struggling to put food on their tables. One soup kitchen serving 11 Connecticut suburbs says 80% of its clients have jobs. Mostly low-wage, no-benefit, Walmartized jobs. Likewise, affordable housing needs have long been ignored by both government and commercial developers, so 94 million of our people now have significant housing problems. That's one-third of the population of the richest country on earth. Worse, 40 million of us now have housing problems ranked as severe, meaning their housing is either severely substandard, severely unaffordable, or both. Housing prices go up, while most people's incomes stay flat or go down, and the affordable housing crisis mushrooms. Meanwhile, the richest among us get the bulk of federal housing subsidies. Not only do multimillionaires enjoy full mortgage deductibility on their main mansions, but also on their Park Avenue condo, their Aspen getaway home, and the summer place at the beach. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the elites continue to ignore the hard realities faced by a growing majority of us, they'll need to build mighty high fences around their own compounds.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Found the bomb of half a century in the parent's car. Another chip on the block, is that all that you are? Look at all the young conservatives hanging out in the bars. The stuff is stopping before it goes to ba 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 ba.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney. We are talking with a young conservative. Her name is Allison Eichele. She is a representative of the College Republicans in Logan, Utah. And she's been a good sport. We've been giving her a hard time. She's been trying valiantly to defend this president and on here on Election Tuesday. And I appreciate that. Let me ask you, Allison, in Logan, Utah, you could probably walk for miles without seeing a liberal, huh?
You know what? You and...
You there? I think I lost Allison. That's not good. Allison? We're going to try to get Allison back. I apologize for that. I don't know what happened to her. She was on just a minute ago. Well, we're going to continue this debate with or without Allison. I'm going to take my calls. And, we lost Allison completely here. All right. Well, sorry, Allison. you know, it was a hard debate, and I appreciate her coming on the air and challenging me. We were talking, of course, about Kerry and Bush, and we were talking about tax cuts. Wait, you know what? This may be Allison. I think she's come back. Nope. Maybe not. I apologize. All right. We tried. We tried to get her back. I like to have someone from the other side. I like to have a Republican there because I think it's important for Democrats and progressives to understand the other side. I think it's important to hear the other side and to know how to respond to the other side. I don't know if I've done a good job here. I hope I have. I've been talking with Mike from Minnesota. Mike, I want to get on to some of my other callers, but do you have any last words?
Well,
Not really. I think Allison does do a fine job in presenting her side of the story. Unfortunately, I just feel that there's just too much of a biased right that doesn't really realize how the corporate world is tied in with the government, and I believe that if she knew maybe more about that, which I'm not saying she doesn't, maybe she does, but that she may have a little different idea or being ready to come on and defend it, because I personally feel that there's a great injustice being done that way.
Well, you look at all the Halliburton no-bid contracts. That's all you have to look at.
I just can't understand how you can. Well, I'm a Democrat, but I can't see how you can possibly agree with the fact that that this group is not crooked. I'm sorry. I hate to be put it so
No, I get you. All right. Thanks very much for your call, Mike.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Mark.
That. You're on the air at the Inside Scoop. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Allison.
Oh, it is Allison.
Now.
Terrific. I'm glad I got you back. I don't know what happened there. I was just praising you for being willing to come on my show and take me on. I'll tell you, some of the right-wing talk show hosts don't like to have people from my point of view on their show. I actually value the debate. I think it's important for us to listen to each other, even when we don't agree. And I want to thank you for being here and for doing that. I was asking you about Logan, Utah. I assume that's a pretty conservative place.
It sure is. It's a great haven to live. I recommend it.
A haven, huh? Protection from us, huh? You folks in the red states. I think Utah is one of those states surrounded entirely by red states. I don't know. But I'll tell you what I want to do.
What can we say?
I couldn't disagree more. Allison, I want to move on, and I want to talk about foreign policy, and I want to get some of my other callers in as well. On foreign policy, you say you supported the war in Iraq. And I want to know this. Don't you think that we should have focused first things first? Don't you think that we should have finished the job, captured Osama bin Laden, instead of taking troops from Afghanistan and transferring them to Iraq?
You know, if John Kerry was my president, I would feel very insecure because I don't think that it's necessarily that we are taking troops away and focus them in other places. You know, we've got to take care of the problems where there are problems. And in Iraq, there was a problem.
Well, there was a problem in Iraq, but I think that Saddam Hussein hadn't done any terrorism against us in at least 8 years, and you got Osama bin Laden that killed 3,000 Americans in cold blood. I don't think special forces...
I don't understand about liberals, how they support Saddam Hussein so much. This guy was a liar. He was committing genocide against his own people. Murdering his own people.
All right.
I just didn't understand why people would listen and support Saddam Hussein more than they would support our own president.
Let me be clear. I want to make it 100% clear. I do not support Saddam Hussein. He's a horrible guy. And when he committed genocide, as you say, in the 80s, when he gassed thousands of Kurds, I was one of the ones arguing that Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney should not be supporting him like they did. Rumsfeld went in the 80s, right after he gassed thousands of Kurds, and established diplomatic relations with him under Reagan. I think that was wrong. I also think it was wrong for Dick Cheney's company, Halliburton, to do all that business with Saddam Hussein. I think we can agree on that.
Not necessarily. That I think that back. I mean, that's funny that liberals say, you know, let's do some diplomacy now when the same things are going on. But diplomacy was bad back then. I mean, we should have just went to war then. I think you're making quite the contradiction there.
Well, no, I think the answer is that I think that Saddam Hussein was contained, and it's first things first. You go after the most serious threat first. I want to bring some of my callers in this. I got a whole every phone is lit. They want to talk to you, Allison. So let's go to my next caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name and where are you from?
It's Kevin from Tampa.
Hi, Kevin from Tampa. What is your question or comment? Who are you going to take on, me or Allison?
Allison.
All right, Allison, got it.
Everybody wants to talk to me.
I'm not going to talk about it, but this whole thing, what she is saying about Iraq and Afghanistan,
yeah,
she better listen to what Condoleezza Rice said. She already said, and Colin Powell said it, they were, their first plan with Afghanistan before 9/11 was to negotiate with them.
To negotiate with who?
Okay. With Afghanistan.
Kevin?
And he's then they saying that only showers. Democrats or only liberals negotiate.
Wait,
that wasn't the plan. But that's not what I called about.
Okay,
I want to call her on something.
No, I'll let you call on something in a second, Kevin. I just want to understand your point. Are you saying before 9/11 or after 9/11?
Before 9/11.
Before 9/11. Oh, you may be right, before 9/11. Okay.
Colin Powell said that under sworn testimony last week.
Yeah, we actually gave $40 million in famine relief to the Taliban-run Afghanistan in May 2001. A lot of people don't know that. But go ahead, ask your second question.
Okay. She made a statement, and I've heard this from uninformed, and I'm going to say that, uninformed Republicans all over the place. She said she's poor and paying 25% taxes of what she makes. If she's poor, she's not paying 25%. And I want to know,
Allison,
how much she makes to be paying 25% in federal taxes out of her payroll.
Allison, I don't mean to be going into your personal income business, but are you paying 25% in income
tax? It's actually 26.
26%.
In federal
And I didn't say that was all federal. I said 26% of my paycheck goes to taxes.
Okay.
How much does Utah charge you?
There's my point. They say it, and they make it look like it's federal taxes. She pays 7 or 8%, whatever that is, on Social Security, whatever the
income tax taken out.
And that's the federal. The rest is state and local, has nothing to do with the federal government, except that it's been going up on the state and local since George Bush is cutting out all the money to the state and local government.
Well, Kevin, actually, I think also that...
That's not true. I haven't been getting increased taxes since the tax cuts last
summer. Well, a lot of states have.
Yeah. Kevin,
I
hear your point. I want to give Allison a chance to respond. Yeah. Allison, I think part of the point is that the taxes that you make when you are poor, the taxes you pay, Social Security tax, Medicare tax, they haven't been cut under the Bush administration. Wouldn't you have done better, Allison, you personally, if Bush, instead of cutting taxes for estate taxes or for millionaires, had instead cut the Social Security tax in half? Wouldn't that have been better for you?
I don't think that's the answer. I mean, I don't think that's good for Social Security, and I don't think that's the answer to our tax problem at all.
I'm just saying you'd pay less taxes.
Okay, but that's not the point.
Okay.
You have to cut taxes where they need to be cut.
Kevin, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. My point is on Social Security, of course, is that George Bush has spent all that Social Security money. He's not saving it for us, for Social Security. He spent it on Iraq. And
see, that's very funny that you say that George Bush is spending all the Social Security money, because you and I both know how budgets work on an annual basis, on a fiscal year.
Right.
And I think that there is a definite need for Social Security reform. I'm not going to sit here and say that there's not. But it's not because President Bush is out there just spending all the Social Security money and saying, oh, in 20 years I won't really care because I'll be a billionaire. That's not it at all. And I think that you're very, very jaundiced when you say that.
Well, no, I remember the debate between Al Gore and George Bush in 2000, and Al Gore talked about putting it in a lockbox, and everyone thought that was really funny, you know, lockbox. But actually what Gore was saying is that our Social Security funds should be preserved for us, for Social Security, that it shouldn't be broken into and spent on Iraq or anything else.
And how are Democrats proposing that we do that?
Well,
like increasing taxes?
No, the way Bill Clinton proposed it, if you remember in 2000 in his State of the Union speeches, he said he was going to devote half the budget surplus, and in Clinton's time there were surpluses as far as the eye could see, he was going to devote half the budget surplus to fixing Social Security, which is why it would be around for my generation and yours. I don't know that it will be now.
You and I both know that that is not a solid answer. I mean,
I think it is.
For all the things, you never know what kind of circumstances are going to come in the future, and to just say, okay, we're going to increase taxes and then we're going to save this money for the next 20 years, and hopefully by the time the baby boomers are done getting through with Social Security, we'll still have some money left for this next generation.
No.
That's not a solution.
No, what I'm saying is if you have an extra need for money, then you have to raise taxes. Look, when we fought World War II,
we
needed more money for taxes. Every single war we fought until Vietnam, whether it was World War II, Korea, World War I, the president raised taxes to pay for it. In Vietnam, Johnson didn't raise taxes to pay for it, and it led, and I'm going to criticize the Democrats.
You know, it's been a pattern that with the wars, there's also been a deficit, and then there's also been a great period of economic growth following the war.
No, actually, and that's why I'm going to criticize Lyndon Johnson. You heard it here, folks. I'm criticizing a Democrat. Lyndon Johnson, because he didn't raise taxes, led us to the great decade of stagflation, of high unemployment, high inflation that the 70s was. It's precisely because we were spending money we didn't have on a war we didn't need to fight that we had such a bad economy in the 70s. Hey, if you want to join in this discussion, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. You can take me on. You can take Allison on. Either of us welcome it. Caller, you're on the line. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Marie, and I'm from Chicago.
Hello, Marie from Chicago. Who are you taking on, myself or Allison?
Well, it's a question for Allison.
Okay.
And before I ask the question, I just want to say that, you know, this has been really interesting listening to you guys.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed the show.
Allison, you know, I have to say, you know, she defends her position with all the alacrity of someone defending a core tenet of their belief system.
Right.
It's like religious.
Oh, I'm sure she believes
so,
it.
But it's not the same as, I mean, it doesn't appear to me the same as critical. I don't want to, you know, imply anything here, but it's just an appearance. So my question for Allison is there anything that this administration could do that would shake your belief system in him?
That's a great question. Allison?
Anything at all.
That's a great question. Allison?
What would he have to do? What would have to happen that would shake even just a tiny bit?
I think that's a somewhat such a broad statement. I mean, you can't necessarily just say that.
It's a very specific statement. I'm being very specific, and I'm trying to be as precise as I know how.
Sure, if we had somebody that came in and was dishonest, like the Democrats have been in the past, and lied under justice, lied under oath, and all those kinds of things, sure.
I'm not talking about the Democrats. I'm not talking about the Republicans. I vote both Democrat and Republican. I have all my life. I'm an older woman. My question for you is, what nature, what sort of thing would cause just a slight shift from, you know, what is such a fervently defended position?
Well, like I just said, if we had some kind of scandal, Monica Lewinsky part two, which would never happen with President Bush, I mean, I would definitely have to be in the grounds of criticism.
Sexual impropriety would be the only thing in your mind.
No, I didn't say the only thing. You asked me for one specific example, and I gave it to you.
Yeah, but Allison, let me compare Monica Lewinsky and the lies that Clinton talked about her with the, let's just say, misstatements that George Bush has made, saying Saddam Hussein's going down Africa to get uranium, which we found out was untrue, talking about weapons of mass destruction, which was untrue, talking about even the cost of a Medicare bill.
I want to talk about weapons of mass destruction for a second. It was never a debate whether we thought that anybody in the world thought that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. The UN passed umpteenth number of resolutions. Even Madeleine Albright, President Clinton, everybody said that they thought Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. It was how we were going to go about approaching Saddam Hussein with those weapons of mass destruction. Oh, and now that David Kaye comes along and says, oh, I don't think there are any there, all of a sudden liberals are all in an uproar that there are no weapons of mass destruction.
But do you think this president has been dishonest? I mean, he admitted that he lied.
No, I don't.
What about the claim that Saddam Hussein was seeking nuclear weapons in Niger, which he knew was false, which the CIA told him was false, and he said it anyway in the State of the Union before all of America? Shouldn't he apologize for that?
I don't necessarily think that he knew that he was making a false statement. I don't think that at all.
Okay, so why was it? But you, with, I think Marie. Well, go ahead, Marie. Do you have more to say?
Actually, I don't. I think that Allison's response was instructive, and I think that. Her response actually, I think, belied the answer that I believed I would get.
Okay. So, thank you for calling, and thanks for listening in, Marie. I hope you listen
you so
in
much.
A lot. Hey, Allison, an hour goes really quick, doesn't it?
It sure does, especially when I'm having as much fun with you.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you'll come back on my show. And I hope you know, because I think if there's one thing that you and I can agree on, it is that these things are best decided in open debate, that sometimes I think we in the blue states and you folks in the red states, sometimes we don't talk to each other enough. And I think it's important to, we're all Americans here. We all want, you know, what's best for our country. We may disagree about what that is. But I don't believe in echo chambers. I don't believe that right-wingers should only talk to right-wingers like Rush Limbaugh. I don't think that progressives should only talk to progressives. I think we need to hear each other and hear our arguments, and we may stick to our sides, but I think we need to hear each other. And, Allison, I want to thank you for coming on air and for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, Allison. We got to take a commercial break, but there's still an hour to go, and we're going to talk about Election Tuesday, Kerry v. Bush. I want to hear what you thought of what I talked about with Allison. And I want to hear, you know, what you think about Kerry v. Bush. What do you think about all the charges back and forth? What about the things the conservatives are saying? I think, like I said, it's important to hear the other side. You've heard it. We now have an hour to talk amongst ourselves. Please call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. This is Mark Levine on Election Tuesday, back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporation.
corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. There may be another grocery worker strike. 29,000 United Food and Commercial Workers International Union members, ranging from cashiers to meat cutters in the Baltimore, D.C. area, will see their contract expire tonight unless the UFCW, Safeway, and Giant Foods come to an agreement over the cost of health care benefits. Giant and Safeway officials say they can't compete with low-wage, no-benefit, non-union stores like Walmart, but have arranged to hire more than 3,000 temporary employees in the event of a strike.
A lawsuit charging Chevron Texaco with human rights abuses in Nigeria will move forward over the company's objections. That's what a federal judge in San Francisco ruled last week. Chevron Texaco's used Nigerian military forces to provide security for its drilling rigs and pumping stations, and at times, these rented soldiers fired on citizens. This particular lawsuit was brought on behalf of those killed during military maneuvers conducted at the behest of a Chevron subsidiary in 1998 and 1999. A key aspect of this latest ruling is that evidence linking some of the killings to soldiers working in a direct capacity for Chevron Texaco provides a strong argument that the company could be held liable in those deaths. There's still a long way to go in the case, though. A full trial isn't expected until the middle of next year at the very earliest.
Show us the jobs!
The AFL-CIO-sponsored Show Us the Jobs tour is in full swing. Workers from each state in the union are traveling through 8 states highlighting America's job crisis. According to the AFL-CIO, each day more than 85,000 American workers lose their jobs. Edgar Moore is a tour participant.
We've been trained to think that if you give a good day's work or a good day's pay, you'll be all right. The company will look after you. Well, now we know that that's a lie.
The tour continues through this week towards its final stop in Washington, D.C.
Some bad blood brewing between auto workers unions in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian auto workers are unhappy with the United Auto Workers' establishment of an organizing office in Ontario near 2 non-union Toyota assembly factories. The CAW says Canadian workers need Canadian unions. The UAW denies it's engaged in member poaching.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Throughout history, some jobs stay and some go. IBM researchers think they've found the 4 qualities that make jobs last in an era of employment extinction. Flexibility, teamwork, face-to-face interaction with customers, and routines that can't be automated give jobs legs. Translation may be the next job swept into the dustbin of history with audio conversion software. Of course, some jobs are expected to withstand the test of time, like doctors, lawyers, and news reporters.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. That song, Kick Out the Republicans, is by Donnie Daly, one of my listeners in Los Angeles. And I save it here for Election Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, we try to talk with the Republicans, try to find out what they're thinking, what they're saying, and talk about Kerry v. Bush, who would make the better president. Well, you heard Allison, a young college Republican from Logan, Utah. We talked the first hour, and I know that I've gotten a lot of emails, in fact, about this already. I've been reading them, and there were a couple that were negative, saying, you know, we shouldn't have that. Most were positive. I'm glad with the ones that were positive. I obviously don't agree with her. But I do think it is important to know what the other side is saying. We folks in the blue states, actually, I live in a red state. I live in Virginia, but I'm just across the river from Washington, D.C., so I'm kind of in the middle, I guess. But I guess those of us that are only around liberals and progressives, we need to know how the other side thinks, and I think Allison was a good portrayal of that. Hey, if you want to join in the debate, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, and I want to talk about Kerry v. Bush. I want to talk about the debate I just had in the last hour, and I want to talk about what's going on in the campaign. Where do you think Kerry is strong? Where do you think Kerry is weak? Where do you think Bush is strong? Where do you think Bush is weak? Do you think that the allegations of Richard Clark have really hurt George Bush over the last couple weeks? And I also want to give you a pitch, an encouragement to support radiopower.org. Radio Power, of course, is a listener-supported independent network. And if you enjoy the programs on Radio Power, please drop by radiopower.org and pledge a donation today. I also want to tell you about a deck of cards, if I can. I like cards. I play bridge. I play poker. And this deck of cards is terrific because what it does is on every single card, you've got, George Bush, of course, is the ace of spades, Dick Cheney, Kenneth Starr. You got 52 plus two jokers that go around and describe the members of the Bush administration, the Republican Congress, the one-party state that controls us. It's really funny. Underneath is a description of each of them. And I love these cards. I use them all the time. But the best thing about the cards is that you cannot just play cards with them and read them and show them to your friends, but they have a special game with the cards that's really fun. You try to collect, you know, the military-industrial complex and other such things. And my favorite part of the game is that you got to watch out because if your opponent gets a Catherine Harris card and a Supreme Court Justice card, they don't have to count the points. They can win. So it's a fun game. I hope you'll get it. It's an election2004cards.com. Election2004cards.com. So you spell out election, then 2004, spell out cards.com. I think they're $8 for one deck, plus some minor shipping and handling. A couple decks of $6 a piece. Check it out and tell them there that I sent you, that I like these cards. Just tell Mark Levine of the Inside Scoop sent you. Again, the site is election2004cards.com. Call in, if you will, 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking on Election Tuesday about Kerry and Bush and Republicans and Democrats and who you think is right. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name and where are you from?
Hi. Laura from New York.
Hello, Laura from New York. What did you think of the show so far?
Well, it was very interesting, but I love that last question, but I'm a little disappointed in the caller who asked it, her rejoinder to Allison, because what Allison said was the only thing that, you know, the main thing that would could possibly turn her off to a Bush presidency was if he lied.
Right.
However, he's been caught, if you look at the unbiased, the news, the hard news sources, like, you know, the Times and the Boston Globe and the LA Times, you compare what he said to the reality, he's lied dozens of times. The fact is, nothing would turn her off to Bush because she cannot accept when he does. The only thing she could turn her off is if he lies, and she can't believe anything anything that he says is a lie.
That's exactly right. No matter how much she's told that the president is lying, she is never going to believe it.
Also, her sources of her information that she tells other people is fact turn out to be falsehoods.
Right, like the recession.
So she's very bad at reality gathering. And she propagates it all over the place.
Well, you know, I think...
I guess that's a Republican way of being at this point.
I'll tell you why I was glad to have Allison particularly, because she's sitting there in Logan, Utah, and I was trying to... I can't think of a more conservative place in the United States,
right.
Particularly a college, because she's with the College Republicans, that's how I got her, than, you know, Utah and this college town, Logan. And what's interesting to me is that I think a lot of people who support President Bush do so because they're Christians and they believe in sort of ending the separation of church and state. But they rarely mention it because they know that that's not something that's going to win over the middle. So she didn't. I didn't ask her religious beliefs. I'm guessing, and I may be wrong. But I think that what's interesting to me is she said if he's dishonest, like Clinton, and as you pointed out, I mean, just look at the Medicare bill. Look at the fact that you have Richard Foster trying to tell Congress the truth, and the administration is telling him you'll be fired if you tell Congress the truth. Or look at the State of the Union.
There was a time when they would, when his EPA sent him some kind of report, and I'm forgetting the details, and it was sent back to them to soften it up.
Right. Well, that's the mercury report. Actually, it's about mercury, which causes tremendous damage to pregnant women. You know, it's for all the pro life.
So there's an unbelievable record over and over and over again of lying, and
right.
Yet she says that. Well, if he should ever lie.
Yeah, like he's never done it. I mean, he admitted.
He would lose his support. Also, she called the middle-aged man who said that his property taxes were going up as a direct result of federal tax cuts.
Right.
And that it was costing him much more money as a working person than it would have been if there wasn't any, quote, tax cuts.
Right.
She called him irrational.
Yeah.
I think I'm sorry that he didn't take offense, because I think he should have. That was name calling and unnecessary.
You know, every week on Election Tuesday I have different Republicans. This is sort of like I said, a college Republican. Sometimes I debated Barbara Comstock, who is spokesperson.
And what I'm saying is that sometimes you hear these young Republicans talking as though the last 20 years didn't exist because they weren't politically aware at the time, and they don't, you know, this voodoo economics, this matter of faith based style of economics that says that if you cut taxes on the rich, the economy is going to go up. The fact that it's been disproved by real experience, real hard, nasty experience that's costing us jobs and on standard of living, doesn't exist for them yet.
You know, I think the gods, if you will, the economic gods, really don't like supply-siders, because every time they try it, it fails, whether it was Ronald Reagan, George Bush. And I remember, and I'm old, older than Allison, but not that old.
It's not a matter of God. It's a matter of that it's a flawed theory.
Well, exactly. That's exactly right.
Something mystical that it doesn't work.
Exactly right. It just doesn't work.
So it doesn't work because it's bullshit.
I remember in 93, reading the Wall Street Journal, predicting that if Clinton's tax increases went into effect, the economy would be a disaster, that we would be headed to the worst unemployment and inflation we've ever seen. And what happens? We have the best economic expansion in American history.
Right.
And, exactly. It's a flawed theory. And I think that, let me be clear. I'm an economics major at Harvard. I mean, I studied economics, and that's not what they, just to defend the profession of economics, that's not what they teach. They don't teach that supply side works. People understand that if you're lower or middle class, you're more likely to spend an excess dollar you get than if you have millions coming in. It's logical. Economics is logical. And these people, supply-siders, it's just not logical.
Right. It's definitely an act of faith sort of thing.
It is.
And it's very unfortunate that it seems to hold so much, that the media is amplifying it and creating and giving it so much political sway.
Well, I think what the media does is they say we have to show both sides. So they take a flawed economic theory that virtually no one believes, and they take, you know, the truth, and they say, well, now the Democrats say this and the Republicans say this, and they're in the middle and they're not going to judge.
They don't use any experiences from reality, from recent history or anything to help people understand which is more likely to be true.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. In fact, there's a wonderful article in the Washington Post that I have in front of me. You can look it up on the web on March 15th. That goes through each period for the last 20, 30 years and shows that when you cut taxes. At least in our recent history, cutting taxes has caused extra unemployment, and raising taxes has lowered unemployment. So this idea that cutting taxes saves jobs, this article goes all the way back to the 60s and shows, at least in our history, it hasn't been the case.
Well, yeah, because most tax cuts actually are just burden shifts.
Right, that's exactly right, because they're not giving more money to people.
Like you said, are paying, you know, because they're paying more state and local, and they're getting less help in
exactly.
Things like... college tuition payments and whatever, they actually wind up less spending money under these quote tax cuts.
You got it, Lori.
Naturally, the economy shrinks.
You got it. That's a great point. Hey, thanks very much for calling. I hope you continue to listen to my show.
Thank you for taking my call.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Hey, if you want to call in and join the discussion here on Election Tuesday, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's toll free. 877-577-2667. You can also write a comment to me by sending a comment to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And while you're there, check out my website, RadioInsideScoop.com. One thing on my website is tomorrow's show, and I hope to stick around with that. It's going to be a great show. I've got a representative from the AFL-CIO who is an expert on how Bush plans to end overtime. Did you know that? And this is something to me, it's amazing. The mainstream press has not spoken of very much. The Bush plans to end overtime for millions of American workers. I mean, this has been around since at least the Great Depression. The idea, if you work more than an 8-hour day, if you work more than a 40-hour week, you should be paid time and a half. Well, the Bush administration is trying to stop that, and it's going underneath the mainstream media. And here we are at the Inside Scoop. I want to give you the scoop. Tomorrow, tune in for a very important show. We're going to give you all the details of exactly what the Bush administration is doing to try to end your overtime. Hey, caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Mark, this is Don from Atlanta.
Hey, Don from Atlanta. That's a regular caller. How are you, sir?
Doing great, and I want to tell you the NASDAQ has gone over 2,000 today.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's that 2,000 is the magical number to keep it over. It puts more confidence and brings up the psychology of the market. Now, I agree with you, the supply side fails the country, but it doesn't fail the rich.
Well, that's true.
They got, the income schemes, distances came much higher under Ronald Reagan, and the deficit, that money doesn't disappear. It's just going to the rich in a different proportion than it was before. And I tell you what, watch out for these Republicans and very wealthy people are out pushing the flat tax and the consumption tax, because anytime you see a Steve Forbes run a presidential campaign on a flat tax, you know good and well the rich are going to pay less if that idea gets through.
But you know what, Don? Here's something that isn't talked about very much. Under Clinton, there's no question that the poor did better, the middle class did better. But it's also true that the rich did better. People focus on the fact that Clinton actually lowered the income inequality in this country, which I think is terrific. But it wasn't just the poor and middle class. The rich under Clinton did the best they'd ever done. And what I think the rich need to understand is trickle-up economics. That not only does it not help our economy to give all this money to the rich, because it never does trickle down, but if you do give money to the poor and middle class, it actually trickles up. People buy more. They buy more cars. They buy more, homes. They go out. They consume. They spend. And that puts more money in the pockets of the poor, the middle class, and the rich. It actually, if you give tax cuts to the poor, it actually helps the rich, too. And I think we proved that in the Clinton era.
Well, I guess it could. But, the rich are looking at what's going to come into their pockets tomorrow. For example, even with a flat tax going in, most really wealthy people don't have mortgages, or they could pay them off. And, of course, if a flat tax came in, the mortgage deduction is going to be done away with. And who's that going to hurt? It's going to hurt all these people in the middle class who were told, go out and buy a house.
Yep.
Look at your payments, $900 a month in interest and $41 in principal. That's who it's going to really hurt it when that deduction's taken away. If it's ever done, I don't think it will be done. But, they're always pushing that, and they're always trying to reform the tax codes. They want to go from a progressive to a regressive system, like they have with Social Security. The Republicans always talk about, the upper 55% of the wage earners pay 45% of the income tax or something like that. But what they don't tell you is that the upper 1% of the wealthiest people in this country now own, according to that same Wall Street Journal you just mentioned, now own just over 30% of this country's wealth.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. 1%.
That is. I mean, that sounds like Mexico or India. Yep. Something that this country was based on just the opposite of having the real rich and the real poor. And I would like to comment on Allison talking about President Bush and the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Looking at the word lie in the dictionary, it says to deceive. Now, if President Bush, that's one of the definitions of lying, if President Bush allows Condi Rice and Colin Powell to go out, as well as Dick Cheney, and make all these statements about the fear and the imminent and the threat of weapons of mass destruction, even though he didn't say it himself, he deceived America by allowing them to say it. Obviously, they're going to clear that through him before they go out and make a speech of that nature.
Well, and he deceived us himself in the State of the Union speech, where the CIA told him again and again, hey, there is no evidence that Saddam Hussein was getting nuclear weapons, and he made that speech. In fact, we know, and in fact, I reported this on the Inside Scoop way back when it happened, we know that people in the CIA were being pushed around. Much as Clark talks about the president saying, find me a connection between Saddam and 9/11, he comes back and says, Mr. President, there is none. We've told you it's Al-Qaeda, it's Afghanistan. And he says, well, you go back and you look again. And then he sends it again saying, well, there's no connection. And then again, wrong answer. Gets thrown back.
He tries to push it off from the British saying in his State of the Union address, it was the British report that said this.
Right.
You know, the British now set our national intelligence for us. But I agree, he definitely misled us. And I'm going to tell you why I think, and what I would have told Allison is, the weapons of mass destruction, if President Bush truly believed those things did exist, then why in the world did he stop the Hans Blick and the UN inspectors from finding them if he thought they existed?
That's a great point. Hey, Don, thanks very much for your call.
Okay,
I appreciate
Mark.
It. Don makes a very good point. You know, why is it that Bush wanted to get in the way of the inspectors? He wants to give us all the time in the world to look under every rock, but he didn't want to give it to Hans Blix. He didn't want to give it to the UN inspectors. He didn't want to give it to Americans along with Hans Blix. He didn't want to give France 30 more days. Could it be that the president knew there was nothing there? I'm not going to say that, but I will say this. I know that he cherry-picked the intelligence. I know from people in the intelligence agencies who've been telling me that what he would do is if they had 1,000 pieces of evidence, and 999 said there's no weapons there, and one said there was, that was the piece they would use. Even if it came from a source that wasn't credible. Even if it came from a source where the own country had said that it wasn't there. And these things went back and forth between the U.S. and Britain and other countries. And I got to say, Allison said that if the president's dishonest, you know, then maybe she would stop supporting him. Well, I think we need to look. I think we need to look, and I think we need to make it clear exactly where he has been dishonest, because there's example after example after example. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop and your calls, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me, mark@radioinsidescoop.com. Call in, though, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of your calls and more of the scoop on this Election Tuesday right after these messages.
Democrats won the election, but Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Reassurances about the offshoring of U.S. jobs today on Hightower Radio. It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I wonder who that is. What can I do you for?
A yodeler. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a sturdy, firm floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Floors made with Plitanium plywood are stiffer and more versatile than floors made with other subflooring materials. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
Intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. That is my song for Election Tuesdays by Donnie Daly in Los Angeles, one of the Inside Scoop listeners. It's called Kick Out the Republicans, and I think it's a good song for Election Tuesdays. We've just had in the first hour a debate with a young conservative, a college Republican representative who came in and tried to defend her president. I think she had quite a hard time doing it. If you have comments on what she said or what I've been saying, call in 877-57-SCOOP. Have your voice heard. I want to tell you about some of the things that I prepared in preparing for this debate today, things she didn't raise, because I think, again, it's important for folks to know what the other side is saying and how we respond to it. She raised the 350 tax cuts. I was ready for that. She kind of walked into that trap, I guess. But I want to tell you also basically the problem that Kerry's going to have and that Bush is going to do running against Kerry. And it's something that really to explain to people in the middle, it's important to understand. And that is that when you're a senator, you don't get to choose what you vote on. Now, that sounds obvious, but it's actually really important. When you're president of the United States, you get a choice on everything. You can say, as Bush did, I don't want to have a 9/11 commission. Now, it turns out that if enough people may fight you on it, Congress may fight you, you may have to back down, as he did. Condoleezza Rice didn't want to testify. She had to back down. But Bush's position was clear. He doesn't want investigation about 9/11, doesn't want investigation about weapons of mass destruction. He doesn't want the American public to know what he's doing. That's his position. And Bush has had a position on all kinds of things. For example, he opposed the $300 tax cut that went to every American. Do you remember that? That came a couple years ago. That was actually the idea of Congressman Bernie Sanders of Vermont, our one socialist in Congress. His idea was to give $300 to every American because he understood, as I said, that lower middle class people, they're more likely to put that money in the economy. And he said giving $300 to everyone is a much stronger way to build the economy than to give millions of dollars only to the extremely wealthy. Well, Bush opposed that. He was against that. And then when Congress supported it anyway, he came around, he supported it. Some might call that a flip-flop. Note all the flip-flops they're trying to put on Kerry? I would call that a flip-flop. The point is this. Bush gets to decide what he supports and what he doesn't. That's the prerogative of being president. Kerry, particularly when the majority controls Congress, when the Republicans control Congress, he doesn't get to decide what bills go to the floor. He doesn't get to put the bills together. You do that when you're in the majority party. So he's got to vote up or down on a number of things. And the Republicans, George Bush and their campaign, are using that against him. They know that you can take a vote, and most of these votes and bills, and I've been there, they're on, you know, hundreds of topics all at once. And what they can do is they can throw it all together and say, as they said that Kerry was against body armor for the troops. Now that sounds awful. Carry against body armor for the troops? What is the truth here? What's the inside scoop? Well, if some Republican tells you they carried against body armor for the troops, you tell them this. Number one, you tell them that Bush was against body armor for the troops. He didn't think the war in Iraq was going to last that long. He didn't think they'd have to get out of their tanks. He thought it was all going to be over in 2 months. The people would greet us as liberators and they'd be home by then. So he didn't plan for body armor. And in fact, Kerry strongly criticized him in the Senate for not having enough body armor for our troops. We had men and women dying in Iraq because they weren't protected. It was Bush that was against body armor. But now in this wonderful projection, right? You know the psychological term projection? That's basically when you don't do something right and then you blame someone else for the same thing. In this wonderful projection, what they've done with Kerry is they put up an $87 billion plan to pay for the war in Iraq. And there were two plans. There was a Democratic plan and a Republican plan. Both plans had body armor. Both Democrats and Republicans understood that whatever you felt about the war in Iraq, it's stupid to send American men and women to Iraq without protection. Both parties were for it. Kerry voted for the Democratic plan, which would provide the body armor, provide the $87 billion, and also tax the rich, undo the Bush tax cuts on the extremely wealthy, so that this would be paid for. And then he voted against the $87 billion bill provided by Republicans, which also provided body armor, that didn't pay for it. Even Allison, our young college Republican, seemed to have trouble with the idea that you should spend money now that her generation has to pay for later. She had problems with that. Well, she should agree with John Kerry. John Kerry wanted to pay for the body armor. He didn't want to put it on the national credit card. And now Bush is running this huge ad saying Kerry voted against body armor. For shame. For shame. That is dishonest. So if anyone comes to you and says that, you go after them and you tell them that Senator Hagel of Nebraska and Senator John McCain of Arizona, two Republicans, and McCain sometimes called a maverick, clearly Hagel's a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, they agree with Kerry. They said that it was unfair for Bush to call Kerry weak on defense. In fact, Hagel said, quote, "The facts just don't measure up to the rhetoric." He said it is unfair to isolate one or two votes over a 19-year career to make such a sweeping assessment of Kerry. Quote, "You can take any of us and pick out the different votes and then try to manufacture something around it." So even Senator Hagel, right-wing conservative, agrees that it is unfair. And that's what they're going to do this whole campaign, folks. You watch for it. They are going to pick, cherry-pick Kerry's votes just like they cherry-picked the Iraq intelligence. They're going to find whatever nugget they can. And if you've got a bill that does 300 things and 299 are pork to Ted Stevens' crab friends in Alaska and one piece of it is health care, they're going to say Kerry voted against health care. They're not going to divide the vote up into its parts. So you watch for that, because I guarantee you they're going to do it. They have done it, and they're going to continue doing it. And part of what I'm trying to do here on the Inside Scoop is to let you know the scoop. And I think a lot of you do know this. I think a lot of you know this, but it's important to have the specifics. Another thing that they're going to do is they're going to say that Kerry said that we need United Nations permission to go to war. That we need. Now, what Kerry said with the Iraq War is it would be better if we had international support. I don't know that anyone can disagree with that. Of course it would be better if we had international support. So he said it'd be better to have international support. He never said we need a permission slip from the UN to go to war. Indeed, Kerry supported the war in Afghanistan with or without UN support. When John Kerry was asked if he was angry about an ad saying he seeks UN approval to defend the United States, asked if he said it, he said, quote, "Never. Never have. Never, ever, ever in my life in the United States Senate have I ever ceded our authority to the UN, or have I recommended it," he said. "Never, not once in one vote, not in one speech, never. That is a lie." So, Allison, if you're still listening, you want an example where Bush has been dishonest? I can give you a ton, but that's a very clear one. He lied about Kerry when he said that he was seeking UN approval. That is a flat-out dishonest lie, and he should be called on it. And if you want to comment on this or anything else I'm saying here on Election Tuesday, we still got about 25 minutes left. Call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Scott from Richmond.
Hello, Scott from Richmond. What do you think about what I've been saying?
Oh, I'm in full agreement with you, and I'm very glad that I found your show. I'm calling for two reasons, and it's sort of it's stuff you've been talking about.
Yeah.
It's something that concerns me quite a bit.
Okay.
It's the way in which the conservative media and the mainstream media deals with a lot of these issues. I wanted to draw your attention to two things. One is on the Paul Krugman's latest editorial in the Times.
Yeah, I read it.
And it's a fascinating – well, his work is excellent. I'm very – you know, I'm a big fan of his.
Right.
But he mentions in passing the Wolf Blitzer statement about Clark. I don't know if you're aware of that. If I can quote real quickly.
Go ahead.
And I'm taking this from the Nation's Daily Outrage quick response page.
Mm-hmm.
He quotes Krugman as saying, Blitzer told viewers his anonymous government sources were saying Clark, quote, wants to make a few bucks, unquote, off of his book about 9/11, and, quote, that in his own personal life, they're also suggesting that there are some weird aspects to his life as well, unquote.
That's pretty vicious. That's pretty vicious. In his personal life, there are weird aspects.
Well, the quote underneath, which I thought was fairly good, this is from The Nation, is the next paragraph reads, which is funny because sources tell me that Wolf Blitzer is still beating all seven of his wives, even the 14-year-old.
Well, exactly. I mean, and note that there were unnamed sources.
Yeah, it's
unnamed
it's
government sources. You know what? I think I'm gonna do is I'm gonna call Wolf Blitzer. Hey, Wolf Blitzer, I'm not gonna give you my name, but I gotta tell you, there's freaky stuff going on in the Bush administration. Bush is doing freaky things. Freaky things.
I seriously doubt that would go on.
Why? I'm an unnamed source.
Because it's a double standard.
Exactly.
And what I wanted to use, what I wanted to then point you to was a website called consortiumnews.com.
Okay.
And I got this from BuzzFlash. Mm-hmm. And it's an excellent article by a gentleman named Nat Perry, N-A-T-P-E-R-R-Y. And it's Bush and the L word. And the L word he's talking about is the term lie. And it's a very well-reasoned, very interesting article on the way in which the mainstream media will not use the term lie in reference to Mr. Bush and his statements or the statements of someone like Condoleezza Rice, but is happy to use that term in reference to Kerry or obviously Al Gore in the 2000 election.
It's
a very prescient article, and I would hope that you and your listeners might take a look at it.
I'll tell you what. You know what you can do? You can email it to me. I love and let me just do this as an open request for any listeners. I'm afraid I'm going to be bombarded now, but go for it. Send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Scott, send me that email. And anyone else who wants to go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, I know sometimes people ask about archives of past shows. They're almost all there, every single one, on a variety of topics. I've had a variety of guests. You can check it out. I hope to add a blog there eventually. And really as a way for us to – and also if you have an idea for a show, if you have a topic that you don't think is getting a lot of news in the mainstream media, or if you're a government worker and you want to leak to me, I love that too. Just send me an email, Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Hey, Scott, thanks very much for your call.
My pleasure, and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to commercial break. When we get back, we're going to talk more about Kerry v. Bush and the differences between them. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, which is also 877-577-2667. I'm sure you folks can figure it out. Call in. Let your voice be heard. We do want to talk about the election, the differences between Kerry and Bush, and I want to know if you've seen these Bush ads. Have you seen Kerry ads? What do you think about them? Do you think that Kerry is coming across and giving all he can? Do you think there are ways we can help him be a stronger candidate? What can we do to defeat this president this fall? And you know, it's not going to have to be just we vote more. I mean, more people voted for Gore, both in the nation and in Florida. We have to win by enough that the Supreme Court can't steal it this time. That's going to be a tough effort. And if you have ideas on how we can help John Kerry, you let me know. Call in 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages. Bush says he cares about the
all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. There may be another grocery worker strike. 29,000 United Food and Commercial Workers International Union members, ranging from cashiers to meat cutters in the Baltimore, D.C. area, will see their contract expire tonight unless the UFCW, Safeway, and Giant Foods come to an agreement over the cost of health care benefits. Giant and Safeway officials say they can't compete with low-wage, no-benefit, non-union stores like Walmart, but have arranged to hire more than 3,000 temporary employees in the event of a strike.
A lawsuit charging Chevron Texaco with human rights abuses in Nigeria will move forward over the company's objections. That's what a federal judge in San Francisco ruled last week. Chevron Texaco's used Nigerian military forces to provide security for its drilling rigs and pumping stations, and at times, these rented soldiers fired on citizens. This particular lawsuit was brought on behalf of those killed during military maneuvers conducted at the behest of a Chevron subsidiary in 1998 and 1999. A key aspect of this latest ruling is that evidence linking some of the killings to soldiers working in a direct capacity for Chevron Texaco provides a strong argument that the company could be held liable in those deaths. There's still a long way to go in the case, though. A full trial isn't expected until the middle of next year at the very earliest.
Show us the jobs!
The AFL-CIO-sponsored Show Us the Jobs tour is in full swing. Workers from each state in the union are traveling through 8 states highlighting America's job crisis. According to the AFL-CIO, each day more than 85,000 American workers lose their jobs. Edgar Moore is a tour participant.
We've been trained to think that if you give a good day's work for a good day's pay, you'll be all right. The company will look after you. Well, now we know that that's a lie.
The tour continues through this week towards its final stop in Washington, D.C.
Some bad blood brewing between auto workers unions in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian auto workers are unhappy with the United Auto Workers' establishment of an organizing office in Ontario near 2 non-union Toyota assembly factories. The CAW says Canadian workers need Canadian unions. The UAW denies it's engaged in member poaching.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Throughout history, some jobs stay and some go. IBM researchers think they've found the 4 qualities that make jobs last in an era of employment extinction. Flexibility, teamwork, face-to-face interaction with customers, and routines that can't be automated give jobs legs. Translation may be the next job swept into the dustbin of history with audio conversion software. Of course, some jobs are expected to withstand the test of time, like doctors, lawyers, and news reporters.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We've been talking with a young conservative on this Election Tuesday. I say it's Election Tuesday because every Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop is Election Tuesday. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and I don't know if all the urgency and energy has turned into complacency or not. I guess that's for you to decide. But if you want to call in these last few minutes here, 877-57-SCOOP, I welcome your call. Tell me what you think about Kerry, about Bush, about the election campaign. There's so much to talk about, which is why every Tuesday from now until that important, vital Tuesday in November, we'll be on the air on radiopower.org talking about the election. One of the things I wanted to ask Allison, I didn't get a chance, but I'll ask my next Republican person next week, is why is it that all the people supporting Bush in those ads are actors? Actors playing soldiers, actors playing farmers, actors playing teachers. What, he couldn't get enough real people to support him? He has to pay all these actors? I mean, I think that's pretty sad. Don't you? It's one of the things I meant to ask Allison. And hey, tune in tomorrow, please. We've got AFL-CIO is going to be there, a spokesperson. We're going to talk about the Bush proposal to end overtime. Did you know that they're trying to end overtime in America? Millions of workers? Did you even know that? I'm amazed. I mean, I hope you did know. I think most of my listeners are pretty well informed and you did know that. But I guarantee you most Americans don't know about it. There's very little news about it. I mean, what could be more important than overtime? It's been around since the Great Depression. It affects millions of workers, and they're trying to slip it in under the wire. And we're going to talk tomorrow about what you can do to stop this Bush administration proposal. But now it's Election Tuesday. We're talking about the election. And, again, your calls are welcome, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
My name's John. I'm in Austin, Texas.
Hi, John from Austin. What do you think about what we've talked about today?
When I first got on the line, I was going to raise the point of the same article that your caller Scott just did.
Yeah.
It's an excellent article, and it leads me to my question and maybe a suggestion for a show.
Okay.
I'm like so many other people, am frustrated that all these facts that we discussed today never seem to make it into the mainstream corporate media.
That's why I do what I do, John.
Yes, and I very much appreciate it. But what I wonder about is what are the professors in our journalism schools teaching their students today? Why do these reporters seem to think it's their job to always echo the administration line, to never say anything about Bush's lies, for instance. These journalism professors are preparing these children, innocent children, for lives of prostitution. You know, when they don't arm them with standards that those young people, and I know it's tough to stand up to your boss when you're a young person and trying to succeed, but if somebody doesn't stand up for some standards soon, I submit what we should do is begin to say that you, the major corporate media, don't really present news. It's only entertainment.
Well, you know, that's how they see it. They see it as entertainment.
I would be happy with it if it were entertainment, if it were labeled as such, but to label it as news, that we're lulling a vast number of Americans, probably half of Americans who don't bother to go out and look on the net or listen to shows like yours to get the real facts. How can we show them that what you're being told on television doesn't really qualify as news?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's a tough question. Like I said, I would sit there and I would hear stuff sitting in the Capitol. I'd be in the Capitol listening to a hearing on Homeland Security. And I repeat it so much, I guess, because it's still shocking to me that we didn't want to require chemical plants to protect themselves from terrorists. And it's so obvious to me that Al-Qaeda didn't bring chemicals from Iraq, right? They used our planes. They took our planes and they ran them into our towers. And it doesn't take a genius to think that they could run a truck into an undefended chemical plant or nuclear plant here in America. And I would hear this, I'd hear the danger, I'd turn on my evening news, and there'd be nothing. Nothing at all. And I don't know whether they're afraid of scaring people, or they thought it wasn't entertaining. It's not entertaining. It's frightening. It's frightening. I pray it doesn't happen, but I'm really afraid these attacks are gonna happen, and then Bush is gonna say, oh, well, we didn't think of that.
I know. And there was a thing the other day in discussing Clark and the efforts of the Clinton administration to stop terrorism. When they talked about stopping the Millennium Plot, one of the Republicans said, well, oh, that was just luck. Well, that's a typical Republican attitude. Government can't do anything, and when it does do something, it's only by luck.
When Clinton succeeds, it's luck. When Bush fails, it had nothing to do with him.
Precisely. Let me say one more thing, and I'll get out off the line and listen to the rest of your show. My favorite statistic lately is that Jon Stewart's Daily Show now draws 20% more audience than Fox News does in that hour.
That's great news.
I think so. I think it talks about the fake news point I'm trying to make.
And the sad thing is that Jon Stewart probably, not probably, I'm just going to say it, has more truth on his show than anything you'll get from Fox News.
And he does it in a bipartisan way.
Yeah, no, I know he does. I have a lot of respect for Jon Stewart and what he does.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, Jon.
Thank
I appreciate that. Hey, it's been a great 2 hours. I'll tell you, time really flies when you're talking about these things. I want to respond to a few of the things that John said about the media, about journalistic ethics. One of the things that you would learn as a journalist, one of the most important things, is off the record. And it's a dangerous thing. I mean, when someone speaks to you off the record, and I've been on both sides of this, by the way, because I used to work in government. I would speak to journalists off the record, and it would be very clear that I could give them all the background they wanted, but they couldn't use my name and so forth. And conversely, people call me, and they give me the scoop off the record. I have sources in all branches of government, and I'm very proud of my sources, and I will never reveal my sources. And that is part of journalistic ethics. You don't reveal your sources. And that's why when Robert Novak said he didn't want to reveal his source on who disclosed to him the name of a CIA agent, Valerie Plame is her name, in order to try to basically to knock her husband, Joe Wilson, for telling the truth on Bush, for catching Bush in a lie about Iraq getting nuclear weapons in Africa, Joe Wilson caught Bush in the lie, came public, and in return the Bush administration paid him by outing his wife as a CIA agent. Now that's treason, folks. It is treason to disclose the name of a CIA agent. It threatened her life. It threatens the life of all of her contacts. But I dislike Robert Novak intensely, but I respect the fact that he was going to keep his source secret because I think that's basic journalistic ethics. It's what John brings up. There are journalistic ethics. Okay. Now, cut to Richard Clark. Richard Clark gave an on-background to reporters asking about Bush on 9/11 in 2002, and it was off the record. And Bush was ordered by, Richard Clark, counterterrorism czar, Richard Clark was required, ordered by his superiors to emphasize the positive and de-emphasize the negative. And Clark knew, as any staffer knows, that if you don't follow what your boss says, you're going to be out on your ear. You don't have free speech when you work for a politician. You are there to promote them. I mean, does anyone think Scott McClellan, Bush's press secretary, is saying everything he thinks? No way. No way. He is saying the spin. That is his job. So Clark gave the spin. And now that Clark is free of spin and has no one to work for and telling the truth, they're calling out the dogs. And, of course, what they're doing, and I heard the worst, of course, was the Majority Leader Bill Frist, who went to the floor of the Senate and said, Richard Clark may have committed perjury, when he told Congress things back when he was working for the Bush administration. Look, the thing I find interesting about all this journalistic ethics is that Fox News is the one that got this off the record in 2002. Fox News has obviously no idea of journalistic ethics, because when the President of the United States, the Bush administration, asked them to disclose what was off the record, Fox News complied. Didn't question. Just said, all right, off the record's meaningless. We're going to disclose it. We're going to throw it out there. To Clark's credit, he said, bring it on, show everything. I haven't been inconsistent. But here's my point, folks. Listen up close. If the Bush administration felt that journalistic ethics were meaningless, they were so meaningless they were willing to waive journalistic ethics completely, just to try to tar Richard Clark, then I got another question for the Bush administration. What about treason? What about treason? The Bush administration, someone there, committed treason. Someone in the Bush administration outed a CIA agent to try to basically defame her husband. Hey, Robert Novak knows who it is. The Bush administration asked Fox to disclose their off-the-record conversation. How about asking Robert Novak the same? Or how about making everyone in the administration sign under penalty of perjury that they never talked to Robert Novak about Valerie Plame? We can catch this person. But obviously journalistic ethics means one thing when it's smearing their opponents, and means something quite different when it's the Bush administration committing treason. The other thing I guess I want to say, response to John from Austin, about the media focusing on calling Clinton and Gore liars, not calling Bush a liar, it also comes up in their past. I've done a number of shows, as my frequent listeners know, on Bush being absent without leave from the National Guard, on the allegation that he was doing cocaine. Bush won't say whether or not he did cocaine, whether or not he was convicted of using cocaine, and that's why he had to do some community service back in the 70s. I compared the stories on Bush being AWOL in 2000 with the stories on Clinton. And I found that there were I think 40-something thousand stories on Clinton being a draft dodger when Clinton was never drafted, folks. Clinton was never drafted. So you've got tens of thousands of stories saying Clinton was a draft dodger when he was never drafted, and there were only 49 stories in 2000 in the entire media on Bush being AWOL. So Bush really was AWOL. He was absent without leave. He was violating military orders that he come back, that he take a physical, that included a drug test. He expressly violated direct military orders, 49 stories. Bill Clinton didn't support the war in Vietnam, marched against it, was never drafted, but was called a draft dodger tens of thousands of times. And I say to John Kerry on this Election Tuesday, you gotta be rougher. You gotta be tougher. You can't be above the fray. Al Gore tried that. You cannot play nice with these people. I like that Kerry has said some strong things. Most of them have been off mic. Things like, this is the most lying, corrupt group I've ever seen. But I think that John Kerry needs to be strong and stronger, because if the Democrats don't take up these charges like the Republicans do, then the media won't follow. Hey, that's it for the Inside Scoop, folks. Tune in to my website. Go to RadioInsideScoop.com for details on all my shows. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with a representative of the AFL-CIO about the Bush plan to end overtime. Did you know they're doing that? He's going to come on the air, and he's going to talk with us right before a big rally here in Washington, D.C., on the proposal. And you're going to find out all the details of what the Bush administration is doing to cut your overtime. And I'm shocked. I mean, I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be shocked. This administration does all kinds of nasty things to hurt workers. But overtime? Is nothing sacred? Overtime? You're going to hear it. Tune in tomorrow, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time to 5 p.m. here on the Inside Scoop. And if you want to advertise on the Inside Scoop, you certainly can. Just send an email to advertise@radioinsidescoop.com. Maybe sponsor a show, help progressive programming. And if you want to help radiopower.org, I encourage you to do that too. One more thing. I'm going to read one email as we go off the air. It's from Robbie in Dallas, Texas. And Robbie writes, "Hi there, Mark. I have to admit, up until 6 months ago, I was a 32-year-old non-political person. But the recent events, war in Iraq, FCC standards, non-separation of church and state, I could go on, has scared me beyond belief. I cannot imagine how anyone, whether a Democrat, Republican, gay, straight, Christian, atheist, etc., cannot be terrified of the Bush administration and the threat he imposes on our freedom as Americans." I couldn't agree with you more, Robbie. I'm glad to have people like you way deep in Dallas, Texas that agree with me. And I hope you'll tune in to more of the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off on Election Tuesday.
But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. Won the election.
deception.